Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale tinakalapo kondwela, lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kuvutika mutima, koma zoti tazisoa. Nimaona misozi masomu wake, nimavuto avale nimavuto.
Good morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to the Zambia Blog Talk Radio, June 20th, 2015. We have almost crossed, I believe, the halfway mark of the year. It has gone by very quickly. Amazingly how time flies. Very shortly, you'll be saying 2016, and then we'll get into the circus of presidential campaigns, both in the United States and home Zambia. My name is Nathan Nkama from Dallas, and in America, a lot of things have happened past few weeks, past few days, and so much stuff is going on, and once in a while, it's important to reflect and just visit some of these issues and how they affect us as people who are resident to whichever part of the world that we are, because we do not live in the bubble. The most recent, of course, is a few days ago, the Charleston shooting in South Carolina, and we'd like to visit that and just examine it from different points of views and look at it, particularly from the presidency of Barack Obama. My good friend Roger, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. Good morning.
How are things in Canada? You are not talking about the weather or saying what's going on there. How is the summer going?
Well, the summer, thank God you asked. If you remember, 2 years ago, Nathan, it was June when we had floods here. So yesterday, the city, I think we marked that 2 years yesterday. The city was commemorating that event. People lost a lot of property. There's one city which is city or town. It's a town, like my own small town here. It's called High River. High River is a town in southern Alberta where you have the river. The river is high up there. And underlying towns, the houses, are below it. I don't know if that makes sense. Yes. So when it fills up very, very quickly. It fills up, the river, when it fills up quick, and the houses get flooded very, very easily. And
hence I can imagine.
Yes,
I
and hence the term High River. Yes. So
that,
we had a lot of destruction from last time. High River and Okotoks are not very far off. We are very, very close to each other. We are very close. However,
Okotoks affected by that flooding, by overflow? Not as bad
as High River. The entire, I don't know, We are affected by two things here, Nathan. One, we are affected by the prairies in southern Alberta here. We are affected by the prairies. And number two, we are also affected by the Rocky Mountains. These two things merge. That's where I live. Meaning the prairies are flat.
Yes.
Nothing on them. flat. So when it rains and rains doesn't stop, it is very, very easy to flood. On the other side, where the plains meet the Rockies, you have these hills, so to say. And Okotok is on the hill, is on the hilly side. So you find where I am, no problem, but my neighbor can even see my neighbor is flooded. So our house is way up there. Yeah. So,
That's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure we can all remember the prairies from our geography, Alan.
I think the prairies we know from our geography is very, very different from the prairies when you come and live here.
Really?
They are different.
Okay, yeah. Also joining us is our friend and colleague, Pastor Alan Chalimulenga from the great state, the Sunshine State of Florida. Chali, welcome back and thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
And also our regular feature and our Yama, whom we love very much, Bachelor, Pennsylvania. Bachelor, good morning.
Bachelor, Yama, I always enjoy the Manchester Yama. No conversation with him because you remind me of Kumufudira, you know. So it's great,
yeah. You know, the reason once in a while we do this, everybody, Ramlinga and everybody, you see, I listen to a lot of our Kenyan friends do the same thing that we do here. Or it's on a very big scale for them. And you know what, Alan, what happens with them? Oh, they could be talking in English and they just break away into Swahili for 20, 30 minutes. They just go on like that and they are not ashamed to do that. But us, God forbid, we should go that Chongololo way. Okay. I still want us to go back to the Charleston shooting. During the first segment, my colleague, presenter and producer Roger in Canada addressed this matter extensively. And one of the things that I learned during that discussion, Roger, was the Confederate States, I told you, included Louisiana. I had no idea that Louisiana was part of it. Of course, the Carolinas, North, South, Florida. And the first question I'm going to throw Kuliba Chali, since he lives in Florida. And then we have, I always get confused between, is Alabama a state and Mississippi? Is that right? Alabama, did you say Alabama?
Yeah, Alabama and Mississippi, they are all states, southern states, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I always get confused about their names. Alabama, Mississippi, of course, Atlanta, and all those things. We had invited, of course, our American colleagues to come and sit with us and talk about this historically, but I know even this team which is here can deal with this. But Alan, let me come to you. What is the general scenario concerning the race issue in Florida, in your experience as you've lived there?
Well, it's in my experience, having lived here for going on 10 years now, it depends on where you are, really. On the streets, the certain officers will stop you, and you know, coming from Zambia, we in the especially in the beginning, you couldn't tell what was racially driven or not. So I remember one time an officer stopped me, you know, and for really no apparent reason, and he let me go after we explained. And so somebody, one of my Caucasian friends, told me that hey, that's what was racially driven. He stopped you because you are black, you know. This is in the South. These guys do these things. He has no right to stop you unless there is something, you are doing something specifically wrong. So I was like, oh, okay. And at work also, sometimes some of my colleagues, when I work for American Express, my supervisor would say certain things. In my view, I would just have been, maybe I was doing something wrong or I needed help, but one of my friends would come up and say, hey, he can't talk to you like that. I'm like, why? He's like, no, that's wrong. That's racist. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't realize it was racist, but I just thought I was doing something wrong. You know? you know, but it's so now after being, you know, there are certain things that you see that was blatantly wrong, but for the most part, people are generally nice. They are hospitable. Everybody, wherever you go, whether Caucasian or black, they are saying hi to you. In fact, as a Zambian, I feel more secure sometimes in the Caucasian neighborhoods than in some of the black areas, because, of course, our black areas are crime-ridden.
So yeah.
There's that aspect.
You see, you've raised something interesting, Roger, and like you said, we're here as we continue with our discussion. What are the lessons from the Charleston shooting? Well, I'll continue with you, actually, before I switch to Roger and we are up. The experiences that you have shared, is that would you consider that our innocence, are we naive, or we are just innocent, or we don't read too much into these things? Because at times I've always had this notion that our African American friends are too sensitive when they are dealing with a white person.
I think that's a part of it. Partly they are too sensitive, and then other hand, I think we are in Zambia. We are still, or at least when we were leaving Zambia, it was still at that point where the differences in people, whether you are a Tonga or a Lozi and all that, were still quite highly pronounced. It didn't mean that you had animosity towards the Tonga, but they would just say, "Hey, you're doing that. Oh, Tongas are like that. Lozis are like that." But it doesn't mean that one of my best friends was Lozi. You know, but we all knew that, okay, Lozis are like that and this and that. But it's not that we had animosity towards one another, but those differences are pronounced and we don't care that there are differences. We just know the differences are there, so great. So when you have white people, there's differences between white person and a black person. You know, for us as Africans, we don't, they are white, they are different from us. So when they do certain things, it's because they are different, not because they are being racist. But until you, like when the same reaction that, the same thing that a white person would say to me, the African-American would be offended. But for me, I'm like, why? That's just his opinion. You see what I mean?
Mm.
So part
yeah,
of it maybe you were a little bit naive, you know?
Probably it's better that way.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah. Roger, I said in this discussion, I'm basically going to try and zero in on and try to evaluate President Obama's presidency and whether him being black has contributed to these things collecting. This is one step. I wrote down a lot of notes in President Obama's statement about the Charleston shooting. One of the things he says, these tragedies must stop. We need to change. These tragedies must stop. We need to change. Give us the Canadian scenario. What is this Canadian scenario as far as race issues are concerned, gun control?
Let me begin with guns. I think the gentleman, when we spoke, Nathan, they explained very well the way guns are viewed in the United States and the way guns are viewed in America, in Canada, or Europe. Let's take our own scenario from Zambia. We have the Ngoni people. They wear cow skins or leopard skins. They carry spears. So for us to go to the Ngoni in Chipata or Eastern Province and say we are striping away these, we are almost taking away part of their tradition, part of their culture. We are taking it away from them. We are as good as taking away the boat from the Lozi people. You cannot now navigate the Zambezi when that has been their tradition for so many years. Let's come fast forward to guns in the United States. That is part of their culture. I think that's what Titus, Brother Ellen here, Bianchi said. And it's very true. It is part of their culture. The unfortunate thing is that culture is harmful. It is hurting others. Here in Canada, they don't have that culture. where I am in Alberta, there is a little bit of a culture of the cowboy. This is, they call it cowboy country. In Alberta, in Western cowboy. So there is more support of guns. Having said that, you still have to register. If you have a gun, there is a government registry. The government which is there, which was like a Republican, but they are not as crazy. They were supporting, you know, to take away this registry. But the police and everyone else has been urging them not to abolish the registry. We need to know who is carrying a gun in the rightful way and in the wrong way. So we don't have that culture of guns the way the United States has. On
that,
the issue of rape. Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead, because I just wanted to say, because Bianchi made us understand that in Georgia, it's illegal, it's law, you need to have a gun. Okay?
Requirement, yes.
Yeah, he said that. And then when you look back, that you say, well, rambling up, it's almost, you can understand in a way to say, America, even the way the country was established, is that they've been fighting wars from day one of the establishment of the nation. Okay? So a gun has always been part of their lifestyle, their culture. We are not by any way supporting or condoning anything, neither. We are not here or there. We're just trying to have a discussion here and understand that to outrightly just say, stop this and take it away, would just be like Bianchi said when I said, bring down the flag. He said, you're going to have a war to do that. So, Roger, comment on the race issue in Canada.
Racism, in my view, I've come to, this is the conclusion I've just reached. First, all human, we tend to have the race element. You know, I watch these television shows where you see in prison the blacks want to hang around with only black people, the whites, the Hispanic. But look at the prisoners, if you really think and they analyze the scenario in prison, they are almost all equal. There is no one who has advantage over the other. They all line up for one meal. There is no job. This one is going to be given a job because you are black, or because you are white, you are going to have better conditions. And yet they tend to align themselves in such a way. And as a people, if it, as a black person, I've had friends who have come to work, if it's a Nigerian, or I've got people from Swaziland, the blacks, there are just certain issues black people will understand me better. So I would want the white people so to say to stay away from me when I talk about some of the issues. And hence, you may practice a little bit of racism. What is different here and America? By the way, I've been here 6 years. I lived here in America 10 years, so I know a little bit of both cultures. Yes, it is how strong their courts are against things like discrimination. So it cannot be an institutionalized thing the way we may find it in the South, where it is supported with a flag flying to depress other cultures. You may not find that. Having said that, when you come into the workplace, that is where now you find it. They don't need to tell you. They're just going to let you know in the way you are promoted, the way you are hired. In the front office, you may not find a black person. And then you go to the back of the company, three quarters of the people are working there are black. Whether that is designed, they know about it, or it is not a design feature, it is very, very present. A lot of us, just like in America, have qualifications which will put us, if it is in our own country, in positions of leadership, positions of authority. However, we come here, we are in mid-range, if we are lucky, to be in mid-range kind of
management or leadership.
I don't even want to say management, but maybe leadership. Let's call it leadership, mid-range in payment. So it is there. Can someone walk in the room and just start killing people? That is the hatred, I think, which has been preserved for America. And it doesn't matter whether it is in the southern states, nothing, whether it is in Connecticut or whether it is in California. This a violent culture, which we find only in America, Iraq, and South Africa, is very unique to these places. You cannot find it here in Canada.
What was the Canada's general reaction, media, and what you have seen? What was the reaction to the Charleston shooting?
One of the things I've observed here, say in the workplace, especially in the workplace, when a discussion like this starts, most white people tend to back off. They will never comment.
Okay.
To the extent, sometimes I interpret it to either to mean they are in agreement, to especially on the treatment of the black people by the police, either they are in agreement, but because of the way their culture is here, they cannot say anything. It is just something they cannot do. Whether they are in support or against, I'm not sure. In the media is very liberal in Canada. So you'd find these things are brought about in the media as, you know, not really a surprise, but heartbreaking. They are brought out that way. They may not have find room the way Fox News. You may not find Fox News in Canada the way Fox News behaves, because they'll be in court. Tell you that for sure. Yeah, they'll be in court for hate speech. You know, Canada is a very, very tolerant, in my view, very tolerant society. It's very, very tolerant. In that tolerance, whether that also can come to benefit people of color in terms of opportunity, we are yet to see that. We are yet to see that.
Interesting. Like you said, where Pennsylvania, how is Pennsylvania categorized? What has been your experience there as far as these issues are concerned? That's it.
Thank you, Vanessa, for this opportunity. I can't speak for the masses, what they think. Of course, we are, you know, the way it's we are torn, you know, when it comes to racial issue. But the only thing I can say about this issue, Vanessa, is the times we are living in. You know, for someone to do such a thing, it's a shameful. And for the leaders who are standing up and condemning it, it takes a leadership, because it's a very sensitive issue, you know, for those who are for the guns and for those who are not for the guns. But for the one who are standing up and to try to say, I mean, I'm tired of seeing this thing, because we have reached to the level where we don't need such power, you know, to send a message, and you know, it's because it's bringing shame to the to our community, and it's making look like we are barbarous. I mean, let me not use barbarous, but it's not bringing any honor because of so many things that we have achieved. So I just want to say, Vanessa, and thank you for this opportunity and for the leaders who are standing up and say, enough is enough. We don't need such power for us to protect ourselves. Let's have dialogue, you know. So I feel for the leaders who are standing up for this, and I just admire them. And it takes courage. It takes courage, because it's not it's not the easy thing, you know.
But Charlie, I want us to go back to the statements that came out of President Obama's speech. And I want us to make comments on them, okay? One of the things he said is, I have made these statements. I have made these statements too many times. Okay, that's what he said. And actually, I just realized, Roger and everybody listening, that during President Obama's presidency, he has had to deal with this incident 14 times during his presidency. 14 times. So, and he said something like, it doesn't happen frequently in other developed countries. La Alan, I want you to comment on that statement, and what does that say about America in comparison to the other developing countries? The other developed countries, rather, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is true, you know, that it doesn't, maybe doesn't happen at this scale in so many other countries. And before I go on, I wanted to say I agree with my brother, I think from Pennsylvania, that it takes a lot of courage. That's the thing that President Obama has to keep balancing. If he goes too much into the black-white discussion, he loses support. If he doesn't say anything, he loses support. You know, so both he's trying, you got to try and balance both sides of the scale. You know, so we, you know, maybe we understand him at that, from that angle. But having said that, we have to understand in America, first of all, the culture of America and also the founding. You know, the guns have been part of it because there came a time when they landed here, the settlers came first, and then they faced those negotiations, make friends, and then there came a time where now we just had to grab land by violence. And then you probably moved from there to now you have to protect your property, protect your family. You are out in the middle of nowhere, no neighbors nearby. You had to have guns to protect yourself. There was always the, we used to watch the cowboy and Indian wars all the time, you know. Those were very real, and those were things that were woven into the fabric, so to speak, of what the American culture is, you know. And now it's at a point where we place it as if it's just against white people, against black people, but it's not just that, you know. It stems from, you know, all, if we trace it all the way back. So guns have been a very necessary part of their survival. You could not survive back in the day. So now, fast forward to where we are, it becomes like one of those now part of who you are. It's part of your identity. It's part of the things. It's like my brother was saying, you take away the spears from the tumbukas and things like that in Africa. They won't agree, you know. So when you understand the history of America like that, then what you, it begins to shape what you want to do. For us to, or anybody to just come and say outrightly, we're grabbing all the guns from everybody, it's illegal, nobody's allowed, that's not going to happen. You know, and that's why they, and that's why they had the First Amendment law. Part of it was that they needed to own their own guns and whatever, so that if there was a revolution, the people were empowered enough to be able to fight and stand up and fight against an oppressive government. You know, they would be able to defend themselves and protect themselves. That was part of the construction of the First Amendment right. You know, so maybe the only thing that we can then begin to look at is how do we get to a place where we can now say, okay, we're not taking away the guns, but let's make it a little more complicated for you to obtain a gun. I have a friend of mine, his son, when he was, I think he was 16 or 17, he went, he bought an AK-47 and a ARA, whatever that ARA rifle is. So I went over to his house one day, he had the guns sitting there, and I was like, what? I was like, yeah, they're for real. I was like, how did you get them? He said, no, I just walked into the pawn shop and I bought. I am 17, it's legal. I was like, that's crazy. There's no way you're going to buy a gun in my country. You know what I'm saying? You're a kid. How did you? I said, no, I just walked in and I bought them. You know, the AK-47 was only $500. You know, so it's access. How does even those that buy them legally, there's got to be a little more, a little stricter, a little tighter. And then registration and licensing, those are the things that we can probably enforce, or the government try to enforce, and so that there is some kind of control which you don't want to use control, use it loosely, because then it can seep into other areas of life and society. So it's the same freedom. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is this. The same freedoms that make America great are the same freedoms that evil people take advantage of and commit evil deeds.
That's very true. One of the other statements, Roger, which President Obama made was, he used the expression creeping resignation. And I want us to use one thing that keeps coming up in this discussion, where Alan has also mentioned it, identity. You know, it's something that has been with Americans for generations, from the founding of the country, the issue of guns. Roger, draw the line between a creeping resignation of the general population to say, this is what it is, and where also a culture of guns and identity of certain people comes in. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line?
I guess time will help us. You referred to Bianchi, how he said the taking down the flag will mean war. Some people... The gun culture, first, the historical background of gun culture was to fight against, I think, some king, the British, when they were coming, King George or something, to protect themselves. That kind of thinking has come even today. When you see Obama come and introduce legislation which says people should pay a little bit more money so we can have health care, The Republicans see that as an intrusion of government wanting to control you. To some extent, you may even agree with them, because when government, one boy, you remember us, and he came here from Yali, he said, whatever government gives you, government will take away. So
yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So they don't like that. They like to have their independence in America, and to fight to defend that independence may mean having guns. It means even having guns. That way, if government came, like the way it was done before, they are able to fight against it. So, with that background, given that background, I don't know if the American culture has resigned to say guns will forever be with us, brother. Brother Allen here talked about to make it complicated for people to get guns. Well, that is taking away people's guns. That is the way they see it. If you make it complicated, you are as good as taking away the guns from the people. It is not only coming after your gun, which is already in the house. We are having your gun. No, even at the way you obtain it, if they put it in so many rules, they are taking away the gun. In other words, they are taking away your freedom. So the American culture, as bloody as we see these things, I think Obama is referring to it as they have resigned to it. This has become an acceptable norm. Having said that, I think the question now is, how do we accept this culture, and at the same time, this kind of terrorism does not turn on ourselves? That, as Brother Alan said in our earlier discussion, we will need a lot of, I don't know if it's education, these are educated people we're talking to, they are not like Africans who have 60% illiterate rate. No, these are educated. What kind of education they need, we don't know. But there is going to be need of people like the John Stewarts of this world calling it the way it is. This is terrorism. This is racism, black and white. Making sure a person like Jeb Bush, who refuses to call what it is, we stand very against it. We do everything we can. He doesn't win the election. Only a person. People are scared now to stand up to the gay movement. All they can say is the right thing about the gay movement. I'm sure people can stand up even to the gun lobby. That day, Nathan, when everyone else will stand up to the gun lobby and put them in the right position, maybe it's the time this creeping laziness of Paul, just wanting to say, well, it's tragedy, let's forget, let's move on. Maybe that day things will change. As for now, I don't want to say it's status quo. Aluta continua. After 3 weeks, we'll forget about it. But I think this is what Obama is referring to.
He used another phrase, which I'm going to ask to move on. And I'll ask, like you say, where and Titus, who has joined us, to comment on this. You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. This is LBTR Roundtable Discussion. And our topic is Charleston Shooting. What are the lessons? And we examined the situation in Florida, those that live in Florida, Pennsylvania, Canada, my colleagues that are here. And what we are doing is just examining and dissecting the statements that came out of President Obama's statement in response to this situation. But he says there's something else that in view, this is in line, and it's a build-up to what Roger has said. Something else that came out of President Obama's statement was, is this the new normal? Are we saying that this is the new normal? That is it.
For a leader, that's a good question to ask. I mean, are we, you know, is this the way we want to go? And is this the way we want to be perceived, or is this the way we want to be looked as a community or as a country, you know? And for a leader to ask you that, it's good, because then we know, you know, if we should maybe change the laws or change the way we do things, you know, mm-hmm. because. If this is the way we want to be, then let's find a way that people understand, they will understand you, or they will understand other people. I'm sure it's a valid question, Vanessa. And it's I don't know what else to say on this, but it's just. When things like this happen, and for, like Roger said, you know, because I mean, there's a lot of people are educated, and it blows your mind. You don't know what to think, what to say, you know, because it's not like we are dealing with people who are not well informed. You know, we're dealing with people who are well informed. So is this the norm? You know, is this the way our professors, our institutions have spend all the time to try to change things? This is the way we're going to be acting, you know? It's a valid question.
Titus, President Obama, I threw this, you heard me, I threw this statement clearly in view of Roger's contribution of Alan. Is this the new normal, Titus? Has the American society or community just slumped into that mode of saying, look, this is what it is, let's just live with it? Is this a new normal?
Well, for defense mechanism, I think it's a new normal, you know that. They can't say that if it's election time. All these candidates that, all the people you're talking about, all these 20 Republicans, when it gets closer to when people are scrutinizing them, they will not say that. Because that explains clearly why one should change their mind not to vote for them. So at that point, they will specify and tell you. They may even side with Obama's talk. Doesn't matter at that time, because it's trying to convince people. You want to show that you know and understand things better than the next person. So you are now at that time, you can't say it's a norm. You're going to be forced to talk like you're smart than the rest of the other people. So you deal with it then.
What you're saying is true, because remember after the Newtown shooting of those children, do you remember when the government tried to push legislation in the Senate and Congress
there is this perception to say, Roger referred and alluded to it, of saying the government wants to take away your Second Amendment right. Do you see that as the reason why the politicians are afraid to stand up for this thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the reason why. It's the same. I mean, nothing. It's not only here. If you look at Zambia, all these things that we're going like a rat race. When you talk about now we are on a DAO, citizenship should be approved by parliament to be put into law, right?
Yeah.
Who are the people? Who are the people in parliament? If Dora Siria was MMD, changes, becomes PF, does this and that and that. That's who we are talking about in terms of parliament, right? So do you think she's going to say something that is in favor to how things should be, or she's going to talk something that is favorable to the political party, especially at that time? We all know these things, that she was MMD, right? Today she changes to PF. Then she's the one that is going to be a member of parliament. Then we're talking about parliament should pass these laws. So which one is parliament? The same recycled people. Who's recycling these people? So we're just going round and round and round. Yes, we're using things. When you tell another person, any Western world person, to say parliament has enacted this act, right?
Yes.
It sounds very good, but what we are not explaining to people is who passed that. When did that person become that? Just a week ago, right? So when these institutions that we call here, when they talk about Congress has allowed the president to go to war, right? Almost nobody questions. They can't turn around and say, oh, the president did the wrong thing. You just say, I took it to Congress and they approved it. But the Congress people are not being recycled at the rate of Zambia, where this one was a Republican and tomorrow he changed to Democrat and then he was voted in and then now that's what Congress is approving. They still have that dignity of the Congress did this. Unfortunately, in Zambia, nothing. We have just lost it.
Okay. Thanks for those thoughts, Titus. Ramalinga, I'm sure you have seen, you've read how, I don't want us to really label this on a particular political party here in America. Let's just use the general phrase. You have seen how the politicians are laboring. They are so much pain to explain why the flag, the Confederate flag, still needs to stay there, why there shouldn't just be a basic law where people, their background checks are done. How politically correct do people need to be on this gun issue in the United States?
Hello. Yes. The thing is that, unfortunately, even in this country, our politicians are controlled by whoever is funding them. And some of them, it is like you go up to them and say, listen, your most important issue for you is to get this road or whatever done in your constituency. So if you support me on gun control, we'll support you with this one. That's what kind of happens in American political setup. Whereas in Zambia, really, the only thing I'll mention was what Titus was saying. In Zambia, even if I change political parties, what happens is that if the president, that's why our pressure in Zambia is on the president. Because if the president says this thing must become law, the president then picks up the phone and calls all those MPs and says, today you are voting this because I want it. And everybody in that party and the buy of some opposition people are going to vote the way the president wants.
Said, yes.
You know, that's how it is. But here it may, the president may not necessarily tell people, but it is the interest groups. So even in this gun issue, it is the interest groups that are controlling the outcome. You know, so if the interest groups, those who have interest in saying we need strict gun control, are financially more powerful, more influential than the ones who are saying, let's have zero gun control, the most powerful side wins. And in here, it's who controls you. It's the money. You follow the money. The bottom line, you follow the money. But then having said that, it is it's a touchy issue. Because the right to bear arms, the right to be able to defend myself, it is a right. And that is in the Constitution. It's not a privilege. The owning of guns is a right. Right? So, if you take that away, the fear or the question becomes, what else will you take away from me?
Yes.
Even those that don't care too much about guns, the principle is that we've got to find a way of stopping bad people, but we can't take away what is right from the people that are good or that are innocent in this situation. So how do you punish everybody? Because, and let's take it, I mean, the fact is we have 300 million people in America, right?
Yeah.
There's about 100 and something million who own guns, you know? And then out of those who own guns, there's just a minute number who actually go out and commit heinous crimes like this. I'm excluding the petty thieves, because I think that's a whole different class from what happened in Charleston. Those that, if I'm a drug dealer, I come to you, I shoot the people who are robbing me, that's different from what happened in the church there, you know. So do we punish everybody because of a handful? It's a delicate thing. Sentimentally, I would want to say, just take the guns away, we solve this problem. But guess what? What about the fangas? What about the knives, the machetes?
Mm.
You know. So it's like saying people are robbing us, there's cyber crime, so let's just shut down all computers because people can steal, can break into your records and steal all your money.
Roger, your response to the same question?
Well, I think he rephrased the question. Violent, but he asked with Ozana. I don't want to...
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. The Canadian scenario, Roger, how politically fragile, or how do you compare to the American situation, and what are the major differences, would you say?
Well, again, like I said, here it may be part of a culture of a given group. It's not the culture of the wider society. Now, like Calgary, where I am, the biggest, one of the biggest cities, it is now becoming just a cosmopolitan city. Everyone is coming from Europe, the British, from the East Coast. Everyone is coming. So, gun culture is not very much ingrained in what is here. One thing I would like to talk about, you know, a politician in America, one of the things cannot talk about is guns and taxes. You talk about taxes, increasing taxes, you are done. You are done, regardless of which state. Well, the New England states, I don't know how they get away with high taxes, but I think people there are educated, so they understand. First day when we came here, first day, Nathan, second day. Now we are going to where we were supposed to go. A taxi was taking us. I'm on radio. A politician is saying on radio, we are running a deficit here and here. We should raise taxes. I closed my eyes. I thought something was just hit me. Because those are not sentiments you hear American politicians tell you that we are going to increase taxes. They don't just say that in America. Never. You know, those are not just things you say in the United States, because you are done. Coming back to what we are talking about, here in Canada, however, politicians can say we are running a deficit, we need to increase taxes, and they'll increase taxes, and probably nothing can happen to it, as long as they can account for the money. In America, whether you're accounting for money or not, if you just increase taxes, you are gone. That's number one. Number two, here you talk about guns. Let's restrict guns. Probably nothing will happen to you. Like we said, it is not part of their culture. In the United States, when we talk about guns, brother, let's put it very, very lightly, they are here to take away our... You know, it was crazy when Obama won the election. Everyone went to buy a gun. The thing was not to kill him, but to take away... They will take away our rights to bear arms. They really believed in that the culture was going to be taken away from us. So that is where you find the Canadian culture a little bit on the layback side, on the way they react to things, to government. They are more like sometimes like Zambians who wait for the election to teach you a lesson, but not as combative as Americans can be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As we conclude, let me go through each one to make a comment. Beginning with you, Titus, one of the arguments which has been made is that each incident involving a gun or gun shooting, gun violence, one, should be looked at in context, number one, and then secondly, what are the lessons from the Charleston gun shooting? Titus. Oh, okay, he has dropped. Let me go to Rachari. You've heard my statement. I don't know if you want to go at that. The argument is that each incident should be looked at in context. And secondly, what would you say are our lessons from the Charleston gun shooting?
Our lesson is that we should remain vigilant and know that evil exists. You know, in all, whatever way we choose to look at it, the root of those issues, whether it's racism, whether it's drugs, whether it's whatever, it's rooted in evil, you know.
Yes.
And that gives us a good starting point. But at the same time, it raises a question. You can't help but to think, what if one of the leaders in there was actually armed? Could we have changed the outcome of those events, if they were armed in the church, you know, could we have changed the outcome of those events? It baffles the mind. We throw out all these things and ideas that run on, but every time you put an idea out there, you begin to examine it all the way, you begin to see that the bottom line is that there is evil in this world, and we just have to be vigilant and be aware wherever we are. You know,
excellent.
There is no single solution that you can point to.
Yeah, that's true. I like the notion you bring up, Alan, of if one of the leaders in the Bible study was armed, would it have helped change the flow? That's where every gun incident should be looked at in context, and what are the lessons from the Charleston shooting?
Thanks again, Lanette. The lesson I should be learned from the Charleston people, I mean, it's very sad to experience such a thing. And just like you guys have talked about where we are in this country, the love of the gun. And then let me just be honest here. The gun, it's a good thing to protect yourself, but the history of that, the gun, you know, it has done... It intimidates, and it's you know, and the way some messages people who you know, it's almost like to use it for another person. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's something that I've experienced myself, you know, with a gun. And my dad growing up in Zambia in those days, you know, he was shot by somebody, you know, to try to intimidate him and with an air gun, you know. And why did that person do that? So we all have different reactions to the guns, you know, and the experience, and especially where we are in this country, you know, the love of that gun, but sometimes. Depends on what the experience you have come across.
Okay.
You know, with a gun, yeah. So
that's true. As we wind up, I know area code 313, you are joining us towards the end. I don't know if you wanted to comment or to say something. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good, good. Your name, sir?
Norman.
Okay, did you want to say something or you're just listening?
Yeah, yes. My statement is simply, if they did have guns in the church, it could have been something totally different. Nine people probably wouldn't have died. Not saying that somebody wouldn't have died, but it could have stopped nine people from dying. Putting in what gun control with a lot of people. Now, I live in a very violent city. I stay in Detroit, Michigan. But,
okay.
And I've been shot. But I still don't believe in gun control, because with gun control, that's not going to stop criminals or people that's intent on doing harm to somebody from doing that. That gun control wouldn't have never stopped this guy from getting a gun and killing nine black people in the church. Gun control wouldn't have stopped that if he was bent on doing what he was going to do. All gun control would have did was kept those nine people in the exact position that they were, not having anything to protect themselves.
That's a very good contribution right there. Yeah, you're right. Like you said, I mean, it wouldn't have stopped him from killing people, but not nine people. Probably if he shot the first one before he shot the second one, somebody would have sort of destabilized him or found a way. Roger, make the final statement as we conclude.
That notion, Nathan, as logical as it sounds, then where does it end? Where does it end? It then will mean everyone should have a gun in the house of worship. Everyone should have a gun in school. So when we have this scenario where everyone else is moving with a gun, whether we are in the we are in the bus, this is what has given us what we have today. It's too many guns. So having too many more guns, I don't think will be the solution. That is in my view. That is not going to be a solution.
Yeah. Like we have already said on the discussion, this is a very complex and heated debate that has been going on. Everybody, that was our Zambia Block Talk Radio Roundtable discussion, Charleston's shooting, what are the lessons? And those that are listening, you can follow us on Facebook, Zambia Block Talk Radio, and on Twitter at Zambia Block Radio. Next week, we'll be talking to the organizers of the Kenya Diaspora Real Estate Expo. They are having a big event in Irving, Texas, and I invite you to come and listen to what our Kenyan diaspora friends are doing. We thank everybody for joining us, and we do hope that you take time to listen to our recorded broadcast. Have a great weekend, and happy Father's Day, everybody. Epota ola la de pirion se epota ola tu la ba di bonse epota.